Yes, welcome back to Monday's edition here of World Football Daily. As I said, I'm a very tired chappy today. And there's a man who's joining me who is just as tired. He spent all his night up watching the Super Bowl last night as well. But there was also the floodlights going out at Craven Cottage that were a big factor this weekend. Jonathan Liu from The Telegraph is joining us to talk all things Premier League football. John, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you. Cheers. Yeah, I'm a little bit bleary-eyed, but Looking forward to this chat.
Well, first,
it's going to be a good one.
First and foremost, mate, I'm really appreciate you coming on your day off. Of all the days that you need to get some rest and have some sleep after being up late last night, to come on is fantastic for us. And you've got a day off on a day when there's a big scandal taking place and breaking across the British papers here. A match-fixing investigation has found that there's potentially a Champions League game that was played in England to have been rigged in some way, shape or form. What can you tell us about this story as it's breaking, John?
Well, I mean, these obviously the match fixing thing, the Interpol investigation, it's been sort of bubbling under the surface for a couple of years now. The fact that, I mean, people have been talking about international friendlies and possibly sort of, you know, German league games, you know, other European leagues. But I don't think once somebody mentions the word England, it's a match in England. That's when people suddenly start sitting up and taking notice. It's clearly still in its early stages. There's not too many details available, but the fact that even the suggestion that a Champions League game in England could possibly be fixed, it certainly raised a few eyebrows and might explain a couple of performances in the last few years, to be honest.
Do you think that this is going to be a massive impact on the same way that the Italian match-fixing scandals have had an impact on Italian football? Do you think this could potentially be something that really is detrimental to English football's reputation?
I mean, what's the number? It's 380, I think they said. 380 matches have been fixed, including, you know, at least one in this country. I think it has the potential at this early stage, admittedly, it has the potential to be something pretty huge. I mean, we still don't obviously know the details, but there's not 380 meaningless matches in Europe. You know, some very important matches, some very big teams, some very well-known players will have been involved, unwittingly or not. I think, you know, this really does have the potential to unravel into something quite seismic.
Well, Jonathan, you'll be keeping your eye on this story, and of course we will as well here on World Football Daily. Somebody who might be thinking that his matches are being fixed at the moment is Rafa Benitez. Chelsea can't buy a win, let alone a point right now. Do you give credit to Newcastle for their win on the weekend, or do you take that credit away and say that Chelsea were actually just a poor performance and couldn't hold on at the end?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to give credit to Newcastle. They've clearly needed to do something over the window. Just to kind of bring in a few new faces and just refresh the club, really, to revitalise it. And it seems like that's what they've done. You know, good performance against Villa and this sort of last minute win. Teams don't generally pull off results like that, like, you know, in the manner that Newcastle did, unless the team spirit is good. So I think you've got to give them credit for that. The interesting thing about the winning goal is I don't know if you saw, I mean, at the other end, just before that, Demba Ba, he gets a little foul. I can't remember who it was who fouled him, but Demba Ba gets a little foul. It's not given. Newcastle goes straight up the other end and score a winner. So those are the margins. Those are the margins that you're dealing with.
In terms of Newcastle and their pillaging of the French league of its talent, what did you make of it initially when you saw that Newcastle were bringing in four or so players from Liga? Did you think this was maybe putting all the eggs in one basket, if you will? Did you think there was going to be this immediate impact from it?
It's the January window. It's a bit of a lottery, to be honest. If you look at traditionally who the biggest spending over the January window and the performances before and after, it actually makes very, very little difference. You'll notice that the teams that improved most in the second half of last season, teams like Wigan and Fulham, actually did very little business in the window. So that there are other bigger factors involved. But the difference with Newcastle is they've got this, you know, this incredible scouting network led by Graham Carr, as we all know. And they used the January window to good effect last season. They brought in Pepe Cissé. And they've not just brought in new faces for the sake of signing new faces. These are decent players. Debuchy, who you know, we all know from Euro 2012, Gouffran, Sissoko. very, very highly rated players. So I think it will have a positive effect. And it's not just, you know, your regular sort of January splurge or Redknapp, as I guess it's called in the trade.
Yeah, the Redknapp that took place this January at Queen's Park Rangers obviously didn't have an immediate effect as Newcastle's spending spree did. QPR have been criticised for overbuying in transfer windows for the last 2 years or so now. Do you think Redknapp's done that again? He's brought in another, like, too many more cooks to spoil this already rotten broth that's being made.
Yeah, I mean the short answer is yes. I think Chris Samba has the potential to give them a bit of solidity. Loic Remy might well get them a few goals in the same way that Djibril Cisse did last season, but it really is, it's an incredibly short-term strategy. If it doesn't keep them up, then you're really looking at another Portsmouth or a Leeds, whatever the positive noises coming out of the club are. If they do go down, they'll find it very hard to shift somebody like Samba on the reported wages he's on. That's the thing with Redknapp. I mean, what Redknapp will do, he's an expensive date, essentially. You bring him to your club and you're like, well, it'll cost you. And that's clearly what Tony Fernandes is finding out. He may well keep them up. It's just a massive, massive gamble by Tony Fernandes and QPR.
Do you think the players that they've brought in, we saw Andros Townsend, we saw Jenas come off the bench and obviously Samba, are they good enough and impactful enough players to be able to keep QPR afloat here?
I've seen quite a bit of Townsend at Tottenham. He played the odd Europa League game last season. Personally, I don't think he is. I think he's got promise, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to wrench you out of a relegation dogfight with a single-handed act of brilliance. Nor is Jenas for all the admirable things he's done over his career. What it really is Redknapp just saying, buy me lots and lots of players. One or two might well turn out to make the difference, but you know we're going to have to get quite a few before we find out. That seems to be the strategy, a kind of a carpet bombing strategy. Because I mean, Redknapp comes in, he has a look at the squad, which, by the way, is spent very heavily, brought in a lot of players in the last two or three transfer windows, not just this one. And he thinks this clearly won't do. So it's really a kind of a psychological revitalization of the squad. If that makes any sense, rather than the actual players that he's bringing in.
What about the attitude in that squad? It didn't look like there was much gusto coming from Rangers against Norwich. It was a very bland game anyway, as we've seen from QPR in a couple of weeks recently. But it really didn't look like that they had this fighting battle mentality inset in their heads that you'd expect a side in the bottom three at the moment to have.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite clear from the last few weeks that Redknapp had made his priority the defence, which was pretty much leaking goals of fun earlier in the season. But it's going to be sort of a fairly drawn out process. They could quite easily have lost that game. But what it seems to me is happening there is that Redknapp is trying to shift the mentality of QPR. We're not going to lose. We're going to be solid. We're going to be tight. And if that means we've got to play out a few kind of dull nil-nils and look a bit drab for a while, then so be it.
Jonathan, at the other end of the table, Manchester United and Manchester City still storming away, obviously, from Chelsea. It is a two-horse title race now. Is it a one-horse title race, though? Mancini said that he feels City are still in this title fight. Doesn't look like it, though, at the moment, with United winning and City stumbling and drawing once again.
Yeah, I mean it's a 9-point gap now. I mean, for all sorts of City's quality, I don't see a player or a for players that really is going to go on a run of 12 or 13 wins in a row, which is essentially what Mancini has said. You know, he said yesterday that's what they need to do. They need to win 13 games in a row. I don't see that kind of mentality. I don't see United dropping that many points, especially with Rooney looking though he's coming back into form. With Kagawa, you know, just you know, coming back into form and fighting his way to fitness, I don't see how City pull this back. I really don't.
Do you think the difference between the two sides is that United have this mentality of down at Craven Cottage, it's still late, but they still think that, you know, 3 points is going to be theirs, and Rooney ends up getting that goal late on. City, on the other hand, don't. Despite what happened at the end of last season, still haven't got that grinding out a win and just getting the job done kind of mentality still.
Yeah, and I mean that's what worked them so well last season. I don't think their mindset is too far off. I mean, they have ground out, managed to grind out quite a few sort of Dow 1-0 wins over the season. What I think is missing is that too many of their players who really did perform for them last season just haven't done it. I don't think Aguero's had a very good season. Obviously, Balotelli is now gone. I don't think Tevez is struggling for goals. When Dzeko and Silva and Aguero are on form, they will win. But they haven't been doing it often enough this season, and that seems to be the main reason why they're 9 points behind.
Do you think David Silva's recovered from that slump that he had in the second half of last season? He started last year so well in the first 12, 15 games or so, and then really drifted off towards the end of the year. Have we seen him bounce back from that yet, or is that still hanging over him, do you think?
It's an interesting thing about David Silva. I don't think he's yet put together a full season at full potential, and that's partly due to the fact that in 2010 and 2012 he's had international tournaments to recover from. I don't think Silva has really managed to put together a 38 game in form streak yet. He's coming into the season. He wasn't really there for the first sort of 10, 15 games, but I think we are seeing a little bit more from him now. And City need him. City really do need him to perform because they're kind of short of creativity.
A man that is very creative all the time and was obviously featuring in that City game, but in a red shirt, Luis Suarez, looks like he's found an ideal partner up front for him in Daniel Sturridge. Are there people at Chelsea now looking over to Liverpool and thinking maybe we should have played Sturridge down the middle at some point?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's Sturridge has started incredibly, and it's been heartening to see, I think, especially from an England fan's point of view, how well Sturridge can play when he really feels he's wanted at a club. I think at Chelsea he felt as though, I mean, Villas-Boas played him quite often. I don't think Di Matteo saw him as a key player. I don't think Benitez ever really saw him as a key player. And he's a kind of player who really needs to feel like he's the main man. And I think Rodgers has treated him very well. He's bigged him up. He's given him the big sort of fanfare. He said, right, go on, lead the line. Suarez can create chances for you. And that really sort of bolsters his confidence. You saw, he's taken on shots. He's taken on players that he probably wouldn't have done earlier in the season for Chelsea.
Do you think it's beneficial to him to have somebody like Suarez there, not only because of the creativity and the talent that Suarez has got? Obviously, he's fantastic. But there's far less pressure on Sturridge's shoulders, even despite the £12 million price tag and people saying that this could be his last chance at a big club.
Yeah, I mean, and the Liverpool sort of lack of striker was pretty much their Achilles heel all through the first half of the season. It was pretty much Suarez or nothing. I still think Liverpool need to see more from Barini. They need to see more from Suso. Because Sturridge, as good a player as he is, he's not necessarily gonna bang in 10 or 12 goals over the rest of the season and drag Liverpool into the Champions League. But there will come a dip at some point, and Suarez has been due a dip for about 18 months now. So, I'd be wary of putting too much responsibility on Sturridge's shoulders, but the early signs are very encouraging.
Do you think this is a Liverpool side that could push for the Champions League, though, towards the end of this season? They're 11 points off the fourth place at the moment.
I don't think they've quite got the depth at the moment, especially in midfield. And the other thing, which I guess is one of the major talking points that came out of the City game, is they don't really have a decent keeper anymore. I can't remember the last time that Pepe Reina was actually, one of the best keepers in the Premier League. He slipped way down the order, and that kind of mistake was the sort of thing that if it had been David De Gea, it'd have been rumours of transferred in the offing. So that's really what's gonna happen. And next season's a different matter. If they sort of spend in the window and bring in a couple more faces and actually gel as a unit, that could be more of a possibility for them.
Could you see United and Liverpool battling out to maybe bring in somebody like Begovic, who it seems all things set up with Jack Butland joining Stoke that he's going to be on his way out of the Potters?
Yeah, it seems like that's what that's what Stoke have been preparing for by bringing in Butland. There was talk of Chelsea being interested as well. I think it's possible. I think Ferguson will stick with De Gea because he is, if nothing else, a stubborn little so-and-so. And he might well give De Gea another season, especially if he pulls out a few performances towards the end of the season. Liverpool, again, it's probably time for them to start looking beyond Rayner, but it's whether they want to take that symbolic step of essentially dumping him on the scrap heap, which is what they would be doing if they brought Begovic in. I think it's possible that they could both be in the market for a keeper this season. This summer.
Jonathan, you've been, I noticed on the Telegraph website, you've been looking at Peter Odemwenge just quickly before we let you go. And obviously everything that happened during the transfer window, and you said that you felt a few years ago this wouldn't have been such a big deal. Just explain to us why you don't think this would have been a big deal a few years ago as opposed to now. Is that just because of the media intensity around deadline day that you're talking about there? And for West Brom, how do they go about reintegrating Odemwenge into their side again?
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially, Sky Sports News has been a game changer in terms of how big deadline day has become. There was a time when I don't know if you remember, but deadline day was something that you'd follow on the radio. You'd go to CFAX page 302 and you'd sort of you'd refresh the page, or the page would flick over with all the transfers. And now, I mean, Sky Sports News, I think I've read they've got 100 reporters in the field. They are, they've got cameras everywhere. They are going to catch something. 10 years ago, Odemwingie might have turned up at the club, got turned away, and nobody would have known except, four or five people that happened to be passing at the time. In terms of, what happens now for him, I think it may well be that the transfer to QPR will be off. And if you think about it, he's 31. He's probably on a fairly decent wage. And it's hard to see too many teams that would take a gamble on him in the summer. So it might be in his best interest to kiss and make up with West Brom as soon as he can.
Well, let's hope that can be done and everything can be sorted as all the fallout from deadline day starts to filter back down into the back of our minds. Jonathan, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show once again, mate. We appreciate you coming on, especially on your day off, and taking time to join us here on World Football Daily. Now get some rest, mate, because it was a late night last night for you.
Cheers, Ollie. Thanks a lot.
No worries. Have a good day, mate. Jonathan Liu there from the Daily Telegraph joining us here on World Football Daily. Absolutely love Jonathan. Go to the Telegraph's website, go to the football pages and see some of the back catalogue of his work. It's great. He brings in the really detailed, accurate opinion pieces on the game itself, but then also throws in these kind of wonderful pieces that add so much kind of humour and criticism of the broadcast media in the UK and the whole hoopla surrounding football as well, in a very educated but still hilarious style to read. I'm a big fan of Jonathan there. Raph, you were watching quite a bit of Premier League football this weekend.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.